I mean, the only way to like really know or think you know what you're getting into is to work with someone you've worked with before.
I had talked to you both and I was just like, yeah, I'm going to do that. No reason to waste my time looking because this is what I want to do.
Hello, hello, hello. This is episode 42 of the Metacast Behind the Scenes podcast. And we have a very special episode today. This is our first episode with our first employee and first engineer, well, second engineer, I guess, I don't know, Jenny. Welcome, Jenny. And we have Ilya and me, Arnab, in here.
It's like you forgot to say the name up front and then you like squeezed it in at the last minute, right? Well done, man.
Our last episode, episode 41, the thing to improve. We always do like one thing to improve in our episode. The thing to improve was always remember to say people's names. So yeah, we did that today.
Yeah, nailed it.
In a contrite way.
Have you had a repeat guest before? Because I might be your first repeat guest. Back from episode 17.
Yeah, I was actually listening to episode 17 yesterday. It was such a fun, like, lively episode, right? And it already showed us how good of a, like...
Culture fit, you mean?
Culture fit, yes. That was the interview. You just didn't know it, Jenny.
That's my kind of interview, for sure.
Yeah. But I think the flow, the chemistry, everything was so good in that episode. I'm just extremely happy that you decided to join us. Today, we'll go through that journey. What led you to leave Amazon, join like this thing, and how we decided to like compensate you for it. But yeah, you were on episode 17. Do you want to quickly reintroduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name's Jenny. I'm engineer. I'm hire number one of Metacast and previously worked with Arnab and Ilya at Amazon. And I'm excited to be working with you both again.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
It's kind of funny because when we recorded the previous episode, 25 episodes ago, which is about 25 weeks, almost 6 months, right? We were already courting you, whether you realize it or not. I think we talked about that actually, but off the record. Yeah, so it's so cool to actually have you part of the team and also on this episode today. Because I remember back then, Arnab is like, Jenny is probably going to leave Amazon and it's an opportunity for us because she's awesome. And then, oh, I think you reached out to him to get some advice or something or whatever, right? And he's like, yeah, let's talk to her because now we also have like this touch point that we can like continue building on. And yeah, 25 episodes later, that's where we are. That's amazing.
Arnab's been technical and career mentor of mine probably for like 5 or 6 years. So even after he left Amazon, as I was feeling like my time at Amazon was coming to a nice time to conclude it, I had continued to reach out to Arnab to consider my next steps and my options. I connect with both of you and your explanations of why you wanted to leave big tech. So I kind of knew I didn't want to continue with another big tech company. And so then like, what did I want to do? So yeah, I definitely leaned on Arnab as a resource in those conversations. And of course, Arnab was like, well, we'll see where our company is, but you know, we could consider that. And so yeah, I'm super happy that it worked out.
Yeah. So quick side topic, okay? Before we get started with a meaty discussion. The last one, episode 17, was in May. That was 6 months ago, like Ilya said. And in that episode, as I was listening to it yesterday, we tried to ChatGPT do intros for us. And it was bad. It didn't know us. It insulted Ilya and all that. It's only been 6 months.
It was when it said, Arnab must not be famous. I don't know anything about him. It was like this kind of comments, right?
Ilya. It said Ilya. Oh, Ilya. It said something about Ilya. Oh. Like, I don't know Ilya.
It knows you, but another you, like somebody else with the same name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it flat out said, I don't know anything about Jenny, something like that, right? I mean, there's that famous line, my training data only goes till July 2022 or something like that. that it says.
So if you became famous after that, I don't know about you.
Yeah. So now this is a bit of like the AI world, I think, has gone crazy, right? It's just accelerating so much. Now, if it doesn't know a topic, it can go do a search, a Bing search, because of the partnership with Microsoft, and kind of find out more. So today I asked again, what do you know about Jenny Buechner? And I prompted it a little bit. I said, she worked at Amazon. This is what it came back with. Jenny Buechner has an intriguing professional journey. After a 12-year career in teaching across three countries, she transitioned into software engineering, amassing over 6 years of experience in the field. Her transition was facilitated through the Ada Developers Academy bootcamp, post which she landed a software engineering role at Amazon. And then it goes on and on and on. And then finally it says, like, her journey showcases a notable career shift and a proactive engagement in tech projects that impact a broad user base.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
It's great. This is exactly who you are, but I couldn't have said it any better now. But we're talking about your intro, but also the leaps and bounds of progress that this tech has made. Ilya, I asked about you and me too. Do you want to hear?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so what do you know about Ilya Bezdalev? And Ilya Bezdalev has a multifaceted career with significant experiences in tech companies and entrepreneurial ventures. Here are some highlights. So it goes on to list like Meta's co-founder and CEO, your previous industry experience, education experience, personal, your podcast brand and your podcast and all, and your technical skills. And then finally concludes, these snippets portray Ilya as a tech-savvy entrepreneur with a penchant for sharing insights and experiences through modern digital platforms like podcasts and newsletters.
I thought it would say like LinkedIn, which is also owned by Microsoft. So.
It could have, yeah.
So I wonder if it gets this from LinkedIn.
Maybe, yeah. And then I asked about me, we won't go into the details. But finally I asked, are these people connected? And it said, certainly. Here are some commonalities among Jenny, Ilya, and Arnab, Amazon experience. So it actually pointed out the years and the projects we worked together at Amazon, which is from LinkedIn, I guess, and transitioning into this Meta's thing. So there we go. 6 months in, I think we can't bash it anymore. Okay, so that's a great intro. Or actually, we have another side topic before we, and let's not ramble too much, but Ilya, an episode 42 is special for another reason, right? You want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, we will get all the answers right now to all of the questions.
To the life universe and everything.
Yes, from the ruler of all mankind. Jenny is completely blank faced. Like, you have no idea what you're talking about, right?
Well, ruler of all mankind rings a bell.
Yeah, that's your title in the company, yes.
Well, yeah, when you asked me what I wanted to have as a title, that's what I said.
But you have no idea of the significance of 42?
I mean, I feel like it's someone's age. It's not mine. Is it one of yours? Is that what it is?
It's mine, but it's not that. It's The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay. Yeah, when y'all were talking whatever you just said, I thought, oh, this kind of sounds like it might be related to that.
So there's like a civilization that has spent millions of years building a supercomputer so that they can figure out the answer to the question of life, universe, and everything, right? And then they finally complete the project and they have like a huge celebration where they're going to like kind of cut the ribbon and ask it that question. And they ask it the question. It thinks for a while and then says 42. And everybody's like, what? And it says, well, I know that that's the exact answer. The question is, you don't know what the question is. So go think about the question now.
Yeah. No, it's like a classic sci-fi novel. It's funny and hilarious. If you haven't read it, you might enjoy it if you like sci-fi. And then the whole thing, when it reaches crescendo, it kind of abruptly ends with this 42 answer, which doesn't make any sense, right?
It's exactly my kind of like campy, quirky kind of humor with sci-fi mixed in.
Just to be clear, I think many people like the novel and they hold 42 dear to their heart. When Musk turned 52, he posted on Twitter 42 plus 10. that was just the whole content of his tweet, which signified that he turned 52 years old.
I think I'm a little more excited by 420 than 42. This one's a little too head scratchy for me.
You can just add a zero to it. Zeros don't have any significance, so yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what 420 signifies.
Okay, maybe Jenny can enlighten us now.
I don't know where it comes from, but it's something in pot culture around smoking pot at 420, or I don't know.
It's the April 20th is the like international smoking pot day kind of thing, yeah.
Oh, that's why it's 420. So it would be 204 in the rest of the world?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's actually get into it, right? Jenny, you said you were thinking about it. Tell us a bit about, like, how did you come to realize that your time at Amazon was coming to a sweet, happy ending? What happened next? Yeah.
It was like a multitude of factors. I had been thinking about changing. I just was thinking like something new would be good. But we were working on this project that was really interesting, and I wanted to be with it until it launched, which it eventually did launch like a few months before I left. Can I say what the product was, or are we like not?
Yeah, it's public now, right?
Okay, yeah. So it's AWS User Notifications, and Arnab and I had worked on it from the very beginning of its inception.
Like many, many years, yes.
I might have written the original one pager for this or something like it back in many, many years ago. Yeah.
You were definitely in the funding part of that project because it was a huge project, right? Multiple organizations needed to collaborate and stuff. So
yeah, so by the time it launched, I was definitely feeling ready to do something else. There's so many things, but the really like forcing factor was that I and my family had decided to move to Costa Rica.
Woo!
Yeah, so we've been here for like 2 months now, but Amazon was having this return to office mandate, which I was not particularly aligned with, regardless of whether I was moving. And they definitely weren't going to be cool with me working remotely from another country. So I kind of always knew that, you know, leaving Amazon was going to be part of my move. So we moved here and I kind of considered, did I want to look for a remote job? I had talked to some companies and recruiters, but ultimately working with you both was the most appealing to me for sure. But I guess that's jumping ahead.
I remember you were specifically looking for like calm companies, maybe a bit smaller size companies where you could do more. Tell us like what were some of those things that were like, this is what I need to have in the next thing I work on.
Yeah, I definitely took some time to reflect on work and what it means to me. Yeah, where I want it to fit in my life and how I want it to make me feel. And I love to have a challenge and to learn, but I do not love jobs that spill too far outside of its boundaries. I have a family, I have interests outside of work, and definitely there were times at Amazon where there was a very stressful tension between work demands and my ability to like enjoy my life outside of work. So I knew that that was something that I really wanted. I read a book called The Good Enough Job that had some really interesting things to think about like what work should look like. And I think that that helped me kind of like center myself in my values. I'm trying to remember now like what some of those things were. I know one thing that I was really looking for at first was just a 4-day work week, because I was like, company that has a 4-day work week is gonna putting their money where their mouth is, I guess. You know, like every company, when you talk to them, are gonna say that they want you to have work-life balance. So of course, we don't wanna burn out our people and blah, blah, blah. Like everyone's gonna say the right thing. How do you know if they're telling the truth? Or how do you know if they are effective in enforcing what they claim to want for their employees? So I did think like companies that have something like a 4-day work week or a something built in that's like, oh, half day Fridays in the summer, like something like that, to me was like a signifier that the company stood by its values for what it wanted for its employees.
Talking about that, the lip service aspect that most companies have, I was also really disappointed to hear about the Amazon like return to office stuff, but even more so because I think the year before I left Amazon, in Amazon, like leadership principles are huge. And there were two leadership principles added to the existing 12, I want to say 12-ish. They're like really, these are the North Stars for our company. And people actually care about them at all levels, from VPs down to like SDE ones. And one of those leadership principles, I'm forgetting the exact name. Maybe you remember, Jenny, but it was something about employee thing.
Something about being the best place on earth to work.
Yes, the best employer in the world or something like that, right? Like a really North Star.
It depends by what metric you define this. If best equals biggest, Amazon probably succeeds in that dimension.
No, yeah, but true. But I think usually the leadership principles come with a bit of explanation of what it's about, right? It really read like Amazon wanted to be the best employer.
Oh, strive to be the world's best employer.
Yes, yes. But I feel like it did not translate at all into the actions the company took for employees right after. And I was really disappointed because I still respect, I love Amazon, right? Like I worked there for 12 years. So I was like, that was one of the biggest head-scratching moments for me. Like, what? Why would you come up with this kind of a North Star leadership principle and then immediately do things like return to office and all that? There's some conflict going on internally.
You know what strikes me about this leadership principle? By the way, I didn't know about it, so now I'm just learning about this new leadership principle. All of the other leadership principles are focused inside. They're focused internally on the things that Amazon can control, right? And this is the best by whose standards. So it's almost like external validation. So it's like best employer by version of whatever, Forbes magazine or whatever. You saw those ratings, right? Like best places to work. I forgot which magazine runs those. But I think the principle itself almost like goes against the culture in some sense because it's focused on external validation instead of being like something that you can actually control internally entirely.
You're saying stuff like customer obsession. That's like, doesn't matter what the rest of the world is doing or what their rating or baseline is. We want to be obsessed about customers and here's how and why.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, we earn trust. We dive deep. All of that is just like, it almost represents a behavior. Whereas being the best employer, especially things like undergraduate attrition and another crap, right? It just doesn't compute.
Yeah. Anyway, enough into like Amazon.
Bashing Amazon.
Not bashing. Like, I like the company. I love it. And I was disappointed in a big, big time disappointment.
I think I've said it before that Amazon would be probably the only big tech company I would gladly go back and work for until I spoke to someone you and I know and he shared with us what Amazon has become. And I'm like, okay, so maybe not. Just things change. But I have only fond memories of Amazon.
I just think working with both of you at the time that we worked together on the project that we worked together, like that was an incredibly unique experience within Amazon. I just feel so like fortunate and grateful to have that because it was such a learning opportunity, not just for like the technical side, but for the product side. We worked with incredible colleagues, the best. And no one was a jerk. There were none of those cliches of like the rock star engineer who was just a jerk or anything like that. I think we had at one point like 50% female engineers. It was such a special place. And I worked so hard to recruit other folks from my program who were
like transitioning from different careers. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think you will find any other team pretty much in any big tech where it's engineering focused, like they're building a product. And we had three women transitioning from different careers almost within like a few years of each other.
Oh, right. One of them was a nurse. I remember that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just say that that little utopia like didn't last forever. It was great to have experienced it and known that it could exist. But I don't think that that type of thing really exists in Amazon anymore, to be honest. But we're building our version of a little utopia here now, which is awesome. That's why I wanted to join you both.
Yeah, I almost feel like we represent kind of the golden age of Amazon. in terms of, I guess, our memories and our culture.
Golden age is a bit too much, I think. We're nowhere near there yet.
No, I mean, in terms of, like, I guess our Amazon experience was the experience from, give or take, the kind of the golden age. At least, I guess, maybe golden age after 2010 or something. Because I don't know what was happening in the 90s and early 2000s. It might have been a different company. But I feel like we brought the good things from Amazon to this team, and we'll continue to build on that experience, like without having to force people to cry under their desks and all that stuff. But at the same time, we do earn trust, we dive deep and all the other, I also almost want to say cliches, but like that's something that people don't get about Amazon. I remember I was in a party with primarily Microsoft people in Seattle, friends of mine. And one of them was doing an interview with Amazon, and he was laughing about leadership principles. He's like, oh, like they sent this to me, and like...
It's like Kool-Aid, people think, like cults.
Yeah, cults, yeah. And then they were asking me about those. I'm like, you're just not getting it. Unlike other companies, those leadership principles actually do mean... That's how the company works. That's why you didn't pass the interview, because he didn't get the job, because you didn't prepare. Yeah, anyway, what's our next question?
So I remember like a few months back when you were thinking about like going to a different company, moving to Costa Rica. I'm sure there are some listeners here who would be interested. How did you go about trying to find these calm companies? Is there a job board where you go and see like these are calm companies? And then how did you validate for yourself? Like, are they actually calm or not?
I didn't spend too much time researching it. Honestly, I was like so focused on moving. We sold everything that we owned and came here with like 6 suitcases. Well, we sold or donated everything. So like the last month, I think I quit Amazon August 1st or something, and we moved August 18th. So I was so focused on getting my family out of Seattle and then at Costa Rica and get my daughter started at school and all of that. It wasn't until mid-September that I even was like, okay, now I'm going to think about work again. And by then, I had talked to you both, and I was just like, yeah, I'm going to do that. No reason to waste my time looking, because this is what I want to do. So I knew I wanted to find a calm company. I just didn't look for any other than yours.
You did meet people from a few companies, right?
I mean, I talked to some recruiters because I was just like, I should find out what's out there. I also like talked to a few former managers who had gone to other companies just to kind of know if they were hiring. I mean, the only way to like really know or think you know what you're getting into is to work with someone you've worked with before. So that's kind of where I started. You know, I have people from the ADA network who were posting jobs and said like, oh, there's an opening on my team. So the best way to validate things is like through first degree connections in your network. So that's kind of where I was starting, but I didn't go too far down that path.
Arnab has a phrase for this that he used on the other podcast: leveraging your robust LinkedIn network.
Yes. Yes. That was in episode 40 with Tramline folks. I remember when we talked, we told you that, hey, Jenny, like, it'd be awesome if you come work with us. You already kind of knew what we were building and all that anyway. And it was going to be a completely new tech stack and everything brand new, right? Like, you have not done any of this. Well, neither have me and Ilya. We haven't done this before, building mobile apps and audio and all that. But I know that that was a big part of the attraction. But I want to hear a bit about like how much of a percentage of decision making was that. But before that, I remember we told you about this, and then you were discussing this with your family, and you had your daughter and one of her friends there who came out with some like really clear thinking. It's a bit fuzzy for me now, but remind us like what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. The time that we talked, there was a time where it was kind of like, are you going to get funding? And if you get funding, then you might have money to hire me. And I didn't know. But then at one point we talked and it was a different model where you didn't necessarily need to have funding. And we'll talk about that later, about the compensation discussion. But it just became clear like, oh, okay, this isn't a blocker. You still are open to me like coming on board. And now am I open, because what I definitely like envisioned was moving to Costa Rica and having a salary. So it was definitely like a mental shift to consider what might life look like here if I don't have a salary for a while. So I had to kind of like wrap my brain around that. So after we had that conversation, I got off the phone and my kiddo and her friend, we were like on vacation. And so I told her like, oh, you know, they do want me to join the company. And they immediately were like working through the pro cons list with me. And yeah, my daughter was like, you've worked with them before. You really want to work with them. And, you know, she knows that I work for Amazon. And she's like, imagine if you were like the first person to join Amazon, like how much money you would have now. And I'm like, well, I don't think this company's going to grow like that. But she was still like, this is a learning experience. And if you wait, then you'll kind of miss out on all of the early company stuff you could learn, like if you wait for them to be bigger and have a little less risky, perhaps. I mean, you know, kids are probably a little bit less risk averse, so there weren't very many cons. She was like, oh yeah, you know, you won't make money for a while, but you have savings, which ultimately I did decide, like, I have enough saved, I have a runway, and I believe in the company, so I think we're gonna start making money at some point.
It was amazing when I heard that first, because they're like less than 10, right? Those kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That kind of clear thinking. Essentially, what they're describing is like the Jeff Bezos regret minimization framework.
Oh, I'm not familiar right? with that.
But I'm sure they haven't heard about any of that before. You haven't heard about it too. So it's amazing that it came like naturally to them to kind of think through in that framework. That was awesome.
But Jen, you have not heard of the framework before?
No.
The key principle behind this is, or I guess the key idea, when you're very old and you would be like, what should I have done? What do I regret not doing? So that might as well be one of those things that you would regret if you didn't take the opportunity. And that's how Bezos describes his decision making. Would I regret not trying, at least? Because, you know, trying and failing is very different from not trying and not even knowing how it would pan out.
I would say it's a very dangerous framework, though, because it's one thing to be 80 or 90 year old and look back at your life and say, what were those critical things I could have done and I did not do and have regret about it? And it's completely different being in your 20s or 30s or 40s and realizing that this is what I will regret at 90. I think it takes a lot of like soul searching. But Ilya, you and I have talked about this before. Like doing this, Metacast, was one of those decisions. Like we would totally regret it if we did not do it.
Yeah, as I was talking to my wife when we were just getting started, right? Or I probably didn't even quit my job. I was like, there will be no other time when the person I deeply respect and trust and want to work with is available to do the thing that we are both very passionate about. Because like, if you don't do this now, you know, Arnab is going to take another job and that moment will be gone. There will be no second chance to do this same thing again. Or maybe a thing like this, or maybe a thing with Arnab, right? And so yeah, we just plunged into this.
No, I'm just amazed that the three of us could figure out the time and space in the universe to work on something together again. And it's like our own thing. That's amazing. Yeah. Let's talk about, like, you mentioned you were looking forward to move to Costa Rica and have some sort of a salary, but this was going to be without salary. So I think there's two things. One is from our perspective, how did we think about it? And from your perspective, what were you expecting? How did you think through this process? And yeah,
I guess to start with, we had no idea how to compensate someone means other than cash. I mean, we kind of had an idea that you could pay salary and you also get kind of stock options, or very similar to what we were getting at Amazon, right? We got a salary, a fixed salary, and RSUs, because it's a public company, that's why, you know, it's restricted stock units. In a startup, it's stock options. But then we don't have any cash flow to actually afford salaries. And we were trying to figure out what's the best way to develop a framework for ourselves. So like if you join, if somebody else joins, what do we offer them in a way that which is both fair and also we don't shoot ourselves in the foot? And so Arnab, we want to tell about your friend who actually introduced you to the framework.
Yeah, so like last year, Y Combinator summer of school or startup school or something like that, I did that and met some people here. One of those friends is the CEO of a startup in Vancouver, Priyesh. And so I know that he does this quite a lot, where he doesn't have full-time employees, but he has a lot of like people consulting for him and contracting. And he has a framework. So we went to him. He introduced us to like this Buffer. Buffer is a company, I think around 2016 or 17, they were the first company to like go public with, this is how we figure out equity for our company, for employees. And they produced like a spreadsheet. And then there's Joel Spolsky had a really good post about how to think about like early employees and all that. Yeah, I think those were some of the things we started with. And then we created like a equity framework for our company and created a calculator.
Yeah, basically we copy-pasted Buffer's framework and just, I think, simplified it a little bit.
Simplified it, but also I think one big thing that we noticed is this framework. Typically, when does a startup or a small company start hiring people? Usually, you don't get to a place where people are willing to work for you like you are, Jenny, right now, right? Like you are willing to join the company at this early stage before we have started making any money.
So I would say actually no one in their sane mind who doesn't know us would join our company, I think. So it's actually it's this level of multi-year trust that has been built that is, I think, the underlying foundation. Jenny, if somebody else came to you and ask you to work equity, what would your reaction be if you didn't know the people?
Equity is a percentage of something. And if that something is nothing, then it's worth zero. Right now, the equity is worth zero. Like, I know that. And I'm not trying to win the lottery with a payout. I talked earlier about my values. I want to have a job I enjoy that doesn't ruin my life outside of work, that I learn and I have fun with the people I work with and all of that. And on top of it, live a comfortable life. And I think that in the long term, this is that for me. And I'm willing to like wait. And in the meantime, I mean, we'll talk about it, but like I am being compensated more in equity because I'm coming on before there's a salary.
Yeah. So that's what we kind of thought is, when would a startup start hiring? Like when would a Jenny join a startup? Is when you have started making money or you have investment from a VC or somebody like that. And you are joining us way before any of those places. Well, maybe not way before, but well before any of those things. And you're taking a lot more risk than the first employee would typically take. And so we decided to adjust the formula for that.
Oh, we should talk about the components of the formula. So the formula includes, I think, seniority.
The role.
Yeah, the role. So the role is like engineering, design, product. So kind of the type of the role. Then seniority.
Is like experience.
Was it experience or was it actually seniority in the company, like the hired for?
So those are two different things. Yeah, there's like level inside the company and your experience.
Okay, they are separate things. And there was a fourth component. I think the fourth component was between how much equity versus how much cash you take.
So that's your choice component. And then there's the risk layer, which is what size of the company you're joining at.
Oh, yeah, it's like 1 to 3 employees, like 4 to 6, whatever, 7 to 15.
So essentially, the later you join, it's like an exponentially decreasing amount of equity that you'll get.
So some of those factors are multipliers and some of those factors are...
Denominators,
yes.
So essentially, it's I have the framework open here. It's role component and it's like a number multiplied by your experience. So these are like things that are adding on or increasing your equity. And then it's divided by the risk component. And there's a bit more to it we'll share in the show notes, because rather than audio, I think it would be easier to read this and see a Google sheet. But essentially, yeah, those are the components and how we thought about it.
Right, yeah. And the place where we tweaked this model is because there is no cash component. I forgot how exactly we did it. I think we added a multiplier for that.
Yes. So typically what companies do is when you join a startup, you have a choice. Do I want cash or do I want equity? And if you take equity, you're given like a 30% extra compared to like what you would get in cash?
Maybe just like, let's put it in numbers. Let's say if you like hire it for like 150K a year, and then you say, I want less cash, more equity, then maybe you are still getting your 100K. But then instead of 50K in cash, you get 70K in equity.
It's basically showing that you are putting more trust in the company and in the long-term future of the company. So you're getting a 30% increase in your total compensation for it. However, that's a choice. Some people would choose, I want to take all salary and no equity. Some people will say, I'll take all equity. Some people will go in the middle. In your case, we don't have that choice. So we thought that this is one point where we need to do something about it, because having a choice and making a choice versus not having a choice are two different things. And usually you don't have that in a startup. So we applied a multiplier here for that. We kind of created like no choice as a thing in the calculator and put a multiplier for it.
Yeah, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe if we just followed the model from Buffer, we would have ended up with something like 1 or maybe 1.25% equity spread over a 4-year period. So that's what employee number one would get. With the 1-year cliff, by the way, because they want you to commit for at least a year before you get any of your equity.
That's the standard, right? In the industry, in the startup space, where if you are the first person joining a company, you would get like 1.3% of the equity vesting over 4 years. And it'll start vesting after 1 year. So pretty standard, like big companies like Amazon when we work there, except you won't get 1% of Amazon.
Yeah, not anymore. Yeah, so we applied the multiplier of, I think, give or take 3. So I think we ended up with something like 4.8. And we were like, okay, let's just make it to 5%, an even number. We applied the same thing. It vests over 4 years, but we removed the 1-year cliff condition because we were thinking like it just wouldn't be fair for somebody to work for free for a year before they see any equity. And I think we wouldn't have done this for anyone we don't know, because it would be too much risk to have somebody actually basically own parts of the company like outright after the first month. But because of that mutual trust, we changed the rules. I don't think any other employee of the company would get the same kind of terms at this point.
No. Yeah. Plus, I think, like you said, it won't be fair to not get anything for 1 year. That's because there is no salary component. If a person joins and they're drawing some salary, then it is fair that you have a cliff of 1 year and get the equity after that.
Exactly, yes, yes, yes. That's what I'm saying. Like, it would be unfair for someone to work for free, because it's essentially free, right? Because assume, whatever, like a prisoner's dilemma, I don't know if it's the right analogy, right? Just before 1 year anniversary, you fire the person. So, and then you got like 1 year of free of work, and then the person walks out with nothing. I mean, there are all sorts of scenarios that you can make up that are very dystopian here.
But by the way, Ilya and I, we ourselves have cliffs for us. I don't remember the details, but 1 year cliff for both you and me, or?
It is a 1 year cliff for both of us. And yeah, after that, we have monthly vesting. So the way it works, after 1 year, we get 25% of our share, our respective shares. And then we get whatever, 1/36th of remaining 75% every month afterwards. So it also vests over 4 years, but we have a 1 year delay.
The other thing we tried to do is the stage that you're joining in, right? So Ilya and I put in, I don't know, about a year of thinking or like whatever into it. We're about to go beta, but we thought, okay, so that's fair that we have taken more risk than you in the beginning. But from this point on, it's almost like equals, right? The three of us. So what we also decided is the revenue model. Ilya, do you want to talk about like the employee salary pool and the distribution of that?
Yeah, I don't think we should say the specific numbers here. But what we were thinking about is, because none of us draws any salary because we don't have any incoming cash flow right now. So what we decided to do is, until we are able to pay everyone, let's say full salary, X, right? What we will do is we will calculate all of our revenue minus expenses, taxes, basically all of the outgoing cash flow, right? And then what's remaining, that will be our, I think we called it the salary pool. So let's say we have $10,000 in this kind of post, after cost, after expenses. I don't want to call it profit, but it's almost like a profit, but before salary. So and then we can just divide this between the three of us until we reach that point when we are able to pay full salaries and actually we are able to make some profit that actually stays with the company and can be reinvested. And we were also thinking that we could be in different kind of financial positions. So we could also make use of IOUs, which stands for IOU.
Wait, are you saying IOUs stand for IOUs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that logical? No, so I mean, IOU is like an abbreviation, right? But it could also be, yeah.
I know. It sounds better when you write it out, or it looks better when you write it. It doesn't sound better when you write it out.
Exactly, yeah. It sounds actually pretty silly if you just listen to it. Like USA stands for USA. Yeah, so we can just say, okay, we will have a ledger where we could say, okay, so I take less this month, but then the company owes me more at some later point. So Joel Spolsky really documents this really, really well in the article, which we will also link in the show notes. We haven't made any revenue, so we haven't put this model to the test, but it seems to be a workable model. What could go wrong?
One thing I want to say there is, before we actually go to Jenny, sorry, we have kept you waiting while sharing our perspective for it for a long time now. But one last thing I'll add here is typically the norm for these kind of like employee salary pool and distribution, like salaries from it, is to go by the percentage of equity you hold in the company. But there we decided to do something different. This is what I was saying, that, okay, we initially took the risk more, like Ilya and me, but from this point on, we are equally all taking the risk and putting in all the same stuff into the company. So that salary distribution will basically do like one third, one third, one third. That's one more way we tried to like do something different in this case, because you're kind of joining at a unique circumstance that the fourth person joining, if it is like a standard startup trajectory, they won't get this kind of benefit. They'll get that salary according to their, or this is not salary, this is more like bonus. They'll get the bonus according to the equity they hold in the company.
So what we are curious about is, when we talk to you, what expectations did you come with? And also, what was your reaction to what you saw?
Yeah, I've never worked for a startup. I haven't done research on startups before. So a lot of what you shared was just like education for me. And I did read like some other articles about startups and equity. But like you said, a lot of them don't apply because it's with the assumption that like the startup has funding.
Or it's going to get funding and it's going to go towards an IPO. Yeah.
Right. So a lot of the things out there were talking about, like with the assumption that there was a salary involved, which there isn't in our case right now. So I think ultimately, like, it was good to know what the standard is in the industry, but because we are a special flower, and on top of it, we have the shared mutual trust, I mostly just went with my gut around, like, does this feel fair? Does this seem reasonable? We all are working right now without salaries and eventually would like to have incoming flow again. So, like, when the company reaches the point where that's available, like, it did seem fair that, like, there's a salary pool and we split it three ways. And if one person needs it more and another person is in a position to kick that can down the road, like the IOU sort of model opt-in.
What does it stand for again?
IOU.
All right.
So mostly what I needed to do is make a spreadsheet of how much money do I have saved? What is my cash flow out personally, which took some time because like as we moved to Costa Rica, it's like we had to buy a car, we had to get health insurance, we had to get these things. But once we kind of got like a lot of the upfront one time, or at least like for the year costs in the case of like health insurance and car insurance, like out of the way, I could like really nail down like, okay, this is how much is going out each month. And is it keeping me up at night not having a salary? When I first moved here, it was keeping me up at night. I was like, we hadn't rented our house in Seattle yet. So it's like we were paying that mortgage. We didn't know how much it was going to cost for our long-term rental here, all of that. So like at that moment, I kind of felt like we might be hemorrhaging money and I just can't not have a salary. But after like a month, things settled. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's not super cheap here, but the expenses are less. than in Seattle.
Right. Yeah, what I just realized, as actually both of you were talking, is we operate as a partnership more than as a startup in terms of like the feel of it. So it's just a partnership of three people, and we just need to get this thing up and running, and then all partners benefit from this.
Co-op, yeah.
Co-op, yeah. I don't know what the co-op is.
It stands for cooperation. I don't know what it stands for.
Yeah, but typically you would see like small farmers or people like that. This is, I think, mostly in the agricultural area, but it's become popular elsewhere too, where let's say you grow rice and I grow corn or whatever, right? Like we'll pool in together, we'll create a market, and whatever are the, after the expenses and all that, whatever is the profit, we do the sharing out of it.
Okay. I guess it's different because co-op would be like each of us makes their own project, earns money, and then we contribute it to the whole, right? And then we divide it. But here, because we work on the same thing.
I think the meta point here.
Cast that point.
Yes, I'm trying to cast it, yes. Is that the models and the communication that's out there right now about it, it's really focused on VC funding and companies that are going to grow, let's say, to 50 people within a few years, that sort of outlook, that kind of companies, right? There isn't much for bootstrap style companies. And maybe there's an opportunity here where whatever the framework, maybe when we have the fourth person joining, that's when we can actually create a public framework for this and share it or something like that. Yeah. Because you are a bit of a special flower, as we have said again and again.
Yeah, always has been, always will be.
I think earlier Ilya might have said that you'd have to be crazy. So I might be a crazy special flower.
I said that you have to be, I think I said out of your mind, to join somebody you don't know. It's an important qualification here. So I wanted to ask a question, Jenny. So as you're doing your modeling of the cash outflow, which, you know, obviously I've been doing as well, how did it feel? You're always in the red and it just keeps like shrinking. How did you feel about it?
I think that it ultimately comes down to like the slope of the curve.
The runway that you have.
Yeah. I have a friend who worked in finance for a long time and then stopped working and took some time to figure out a small business to buy. And then COVID happened. And anyway, ultimately, like she wasn't working for at least a couple years. So when I was thinking about this, I talked to her and I was like, does it keep you up at night? And this is a person who like went to Harvard Business School and knows her shit. And she was like, no, it's not stressful at all because like, I have a spreadsheet. I was like, okay, I just need to like model this out and know this is the number below which I'm not comfortable going and how far away is that? And having to like include padding for unexpected things or catastrophic things. I also like am operating under the assumption, which hopefully isn't far off the mark, that like if I reach a point where I was like, I really want to make money, that I think that I'm still marketable in the software industry, and that there are still like reasonably enough remote jobs that would hire me even though I'm working in Costa Rica. So like if I reach the point where I'm not comfortable with this anymore, I want to get a job that pays me a salary, that from that point, it wouldn't take me a year to find that job. I think it would take me maybe 3 months, 3 to 6 months, whatever it is. But yeah, ultimately, I have enough runway. I mean, it definitely, if I were living in Seattle, I don't think I would have done this because my expenses are a lot higher in Seattle. And also like the healthcare in the United States paying out of pocket is a lot more.
I can tell you precisely, it's $850 per month. It's a lot.
And that's for your family, Ilya? Four people?
It's for my family, yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And don't get me started on healthcare because that's just like what you pay. But then if you actually go to the doctor, I mean, there's a deductible, right? So you still have to pay all that. There's so much money that goes out before it legitimately kicks in.
I actually feel like it makes you more marketable because you have like 6-7 years of experience at Amazon building like APIs and high scale backend services, right? Now you're picking up something completely different. it makes you a more full stack engineer. It makes you a more, I think, more experienced, more well-rounded engineer. But aside from the engineering and the technical stuff, I think something about working at a very early stage company, there's so much more. I think that's the next segment we'll go into before we wrap this up. I feel like there's a lot of companies that value people like that with the entrepreneurial kind of experience and spirit in them.
I think part of that is also you don't run in your sort of in your swim lane like you would in a big company, right? You're all over. You are part of all of the product decisions, design decisions. You see the entire business in and out, and it just makes you a much more rounded person, much more rounded professional in general. So I do feel like, especially for the two of you, for engineers, I think you become much more marketable after this. And I think the opportunities for you are even better.
Right. Okay, so let's get into that last segment. What is your role at Metacast? What are you doing? Which part of the pigeonhole?
My role title is senior software. What is it? Senior software engineer?
What is it?
I mean, a title's a title. Like, I'm here to do whatever needs to get done. I'm excited to, like, get this product ready for people to use it. So anything that I see that I feel equipped to pick up and run with and get out the door, like, that's what I'm doing. Which right now, as you said, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm mostly ramping up. But I am feeling like I'm making progress and getting a better lay of the land with the code base and all of that. And there are features that I want to see. So those are the things that I'm excited to work on.
I'll have to add a correction to what she just said about ramping up. So we had this long-standing issue with HTML not rendering. Not that big because you couldn't fix it. It was later in our backlog. And we didn't prioritize it, right? I mean, it was a P0, but we just like, yeah, we know how to fix it. We'll just do it later, right?
I think the things that really differentiate our app, that's what we try to work on first. Then the table stakes of getting it just like every other podcast. And what would you expect, like, from a podcast listening experience? That. But even in there, we try to focus on the things that have unknowns. The hardest things, the things that, like, you wouldn't know what's the right UX unless you build it and get a few people to, like, try it out and tell you how it's going. Those are the things. So this HTML thing, we knew it looks like pathetic when you see this P and UL and LI HTML elements in the text. And I think two people have told us that this looks weird, right? And we have told them, yeah, we know how to fix this. We'll do this later, yeah.
Yeah. And then Jane just, I think one morning, like a few days ago, I saw this message in Slack. She's like, oh, I forgot exactly what the framing was. I think you needed to distract yourself from, like, the thing you were banging your head on the wall with. And you're like, oh, I just looked at this. And yeah, I found the library and it's just like, it's done. It's like fixed. And I look at this and it just looks so awesome. So that's going to be your first publicly shipped user-facing feature, right? Which you will ship to closed beta users. So it's not just ramp up. It's actually already delivering value, what, like 2.5 weeks in? Awesome.
Well, to your point, the thing that I was working on, we were kind of like not sure of what the UX is going to be. So I was messing around with it to learn, but I also was like, I don't want to dump too much time into this if we go a totally different direction, because it's also like new enough to me that refactoring it might be more confusing than if I just started from scratch if we like go a completely different direction. So I just wanted to feel like I delivered something. So I was like, this seems like low-hanging fruit. Let me like pick this up and bang it out.
Yeah, yeah. And also you were working on podcast downloads, which is your own issue that you experience right now. And you're like, gotta fix it, right? And it's not complete yet, but you've started figuring it out. So yeah, that's actually so awesome to see that capacity starts to increase right now in terms of the throughput that I guess that we can take as a team. I can already see that. It's not a 2x at this point yet, right? Maybe like 1.3, 1.4, I would say at this point, right? Because some ramp up still needs to be done. Also, Arnab maybe needs to help more than he would when it's like at full speed. So it's just totally normal, right? But like in a big company, you would still be at this state like 3 months in. Now we are talking about 2 weeks, which is pretty awesome.
Plus, I think this goes both ways. Like at a early stage company, you need people like that. But you also need to foster that kind of culture in early stage companies, right? For example, in Amazon, you wouldn't know to pick up this other thing that you want to work on, right?
Out of 800 things in the backlog.
Yeah. And you wouldn't know how others would react to it if you picked up something else. If the product manager or the software development manager that you report to would be happy with that or not. And this is the kind of thing you need in a startup, is just go do it, right? Like, you have much more trust. And
I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to join you. Another reason is that I can skip the whole interview process. I don't have to study things that I don't need to know for this job. I can skip over like imposter syndrome. You both know me. You know I don't know any of this stuff. I'm not pretending like I do. We all know that I need to learn it. You've worked with me before. You know I can learn it. Yeah, we can skip all of that beginning stuff where I worry about what you think when I say I'm completely lost. I just put it out there like, Arnab, I'm stuck. Like, whenever you can. And in the meantime, I'll just pick something up that seems easy.
As you're saying this, I just imagined if there was a stranger in your place right now, that I would feel weird about having somebody like, I don't know. Like you said, that you have to figure them out. When they say this, do they mean what they say? Is there any underlying meaning or anything like that? But we know how to read each other. And there is no hesitation in like asking for things, like challenging each other, because we've built this over the years. So now I almost feel like we are coming to a formula, which I guess other people come to as well before us, is when you start a company, it's best to do it with people you know, because you just skip so much that ramp up on the interpersonal level.
If you think about it, we have interviewed each other. All three of us have interviewed all the other two of this group over like 5 to 7 years. That's why there was no interview or anything like that, yeah.
And never once did I have to traverse a tree.
Actually, we did interview Jenny for the initial job at AWS when she joined our team.
It's true. It was my first time talking to a principal engineer in that loop as like an SDE1. It was awesome. I was like, my org doesn't even have a principal and I'm talking to a principal here.
Yeah. So very soon we are at like 2.3x engineers or something like that between me, Jenny, and Ilya, who does everything but also finds some time to code and do things on the side. I don't know how. We like totally distracted the whole time.
Yeah. So we are super, super excited. And yeah, I guess welcome to the team again. And I really enjoyed actually recording this, because there were some things that we wanted to ask, like how did you feel about stuff, right? So which we just savored for this episode, because you said you would be able to share it. And so we were like, okay, let's not ask this. Let's make it the first time conversation, as opposed to repeating what we've already talked about. So that's really awesome.
If you talk about these things before the conversation, when you're recording the podcast, is never going to be exactly the same.
Actually, that reminds me of, we have this like asynchronous workflow in Slack every few days, a stand-up thread with questions. And the questions are like, what have you worked on since the last? What are you doing next? And we recently added, how do you feel? Which I think is really nice, because I had been sick since Sunday, but like not really so sick that I would tell you like, oh, you guys, I'm sick. But adding the how do you feel, you can just be like, oh, I've been feeling a little crummy, like, or my kid is home today and I'm stressed. Like, it just gives you that opening to like throw that out there, so people kind of know where your headspace is. Like, how do you feel physically? Or like, oh, I'm frustrated because I've been stuck on this thing. Like, whatever that prompts you to respond with. I think it's nice.
Yeah, it kind of gives you that license to share. Like you said, like, should I share, should I not share? And this is just a prompt for you to just go for it. And the way it came up, so Arnab just added it to his update, where he said that he was up until 1, and then he was so like excited by the stuff he was working on that he couldn't sleep until 4. But in the end, he woke up at his normal like morning hours, and he was too sleepy to be properly functional. So he's kind of a bit slow today. That's useful to know, because then we can, you know, give him a bit of slack and just be more gentle.
One of the most powerful things in a small early stage company where you have 2-3 people just working together is to go with your energy and flow. Some days you're feeling great, go for it. And some days maybe after that you decide, okay, I did too much, I need a break, and you take a break. There isn't like a standard every day 9 to 5 is expected from you. You have to take the positive side of that. And I feel like because there can be energy flows like that, it's important for others to know how you're feeling today and what to expect from you, like you said.
Yeah, I forgot if I shared this before on the podcast, but one thing I figured out about myself recently, I just stopped forcing myself to be productive in the mornings. I'm like, I'll do all sorts of unproductive stuff before 10, 11 a.m. And then I slowly start getting into the groove of like going deep. But then because I already cleared my mind of all of the small stuff, I can just go completely focused in there. Whereas previously, I would try to do the all of those productivity gurus recommend, right? I would try to eat the frog in the morning, but then I would just get frustrated. And then like the entire day is sort of meh. But now I'm finding that. And it's something that would be impossible in the corporation because of all the meetings, and you just have to be there at 9 o'clock, no matter how you feel. Cool. So Jenny and Arnab, it was great having you on the show. And
thanks for having me.
We'll have you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah.